However, our men are not there for jokes, you know. I mean, they're not there because they just wanted to go to Germany. They're there to watch the line, you know.
Well, it's a strange experience, too, to find yourself in the middle of a crossfire, especially during Vietnam when I was there, because you're having to answer questions that you've never had to answer before.
I figured there would be some kind of gratitude.
Yeah, well, you learn real quick that that's not gonna happen. And everyone that you meet out in the fields, the farmers and people like that, all fought on the Russian front.
Yeah, right.
All of them. That's what they tell you.
Yeah, right.
Every one of them.
They were only following order.
Just Austrian. I'm Austrian. Swiss.
Oh, I studied in Switzerland. My father was a real believer in Renaissance education. Traveling was very important.
Yeah, but has you ever been to Milwaukee?
I have been to Milwaukee. I did a telethon in Milwaukee for the Variety Club, of which I am a life patron. Yeah, I had a good time there.
We were just hearing some of the stories about people crashing into the locations in New York when you were shooting that you would know, old friends.
Oh, yeah.
Onlookers, whatever.
Yeah.
Is that, I hadn't realized that you were... Tell me about your roots back there a little bit.
I was born on the west side of New York City in 1945. I grew up there, and I moved out of New York when I was 27. I came to California for a month with $1,000, and I haven't gone home yet. And on July 19th, I start the 10th year of Happy Days.
And are you getting letters saying, Henry, come home?
I did there for a while, yeah. Now my parents are coming here Monday for my stepson's birthday party.
I'd like to get into something that I've heard several times throughout the trip this time around, that this film is a new direction for you, and we talked a little bit about it in the other room, because I, for one, don't see it necessarily as being all that radically different from a lot of moments in something like One and Only.
Uh-huh. Well, The One and Only was a much more bizarre and a much more Bill-like character. I just watched it again with my wife since I hadn't seen it since 78. the other week on tape, and I mean, he just jumps all over the place. Chuck is a very staid, quiet character. Ronnie came to me when I was having lunch during one of the breaks in Happy Days, and he said, "Here, read this script. I can't promise you anything." I said, "I read it, you know. I knew the writers real well because they were producing Happy Days." And he said, "Okay, what part would you play?" I said, "Well, of course, I'll play Bill." He said, "Right, so you'll play Chuck." I said, "But I always play Bill." He said, "Right, so this time you'll play Chuck." And in 1977, I started talking to Ronnie about him directing. Because he said, "I'm going to be a director. I think I want to direct." I said, "Ronnie, as you say that, I know that you will be good at it. I know that you will direct me in a film. You know, eventually. I look forward to being directed by you." Even though he was just talking about it and 10 years younger than I was. And it came to pass. And now I hope that I become part of his repertory company. And that a lot of the films that I do for the rest of my life are directed by him. Because the relationship that we had as actor to actor is unequaled on television. We would take a 3-page scene, we would rehearse it, improvise it, and shoot it 3 times in 15 minutes. And as a director and an actor, we have this shorthand and respect and love that is just, it's special, it's incredible.
Ron Howard brought up the fact that that potentially could be a problem and that a friendship might be jeopardized in such a working relationship mm-hmm. as it continues. How do you feel about
that? Well, what did he say after that?
That it wasn't.
Of course, that it hasn't, yeah.
That's right.
But where do you see the pitfalls?
For you?
There are no pitfalls. I argue with him. I win and I lose. I trust him implicitly. He knows me like a hawk. And he knows what he wants. And he has the final say as the director. And I am willing to say, okay, you are the director. You have the final say. I will trust you and go with you.
But that's the thing that he was worried about, because he'd never worked in that capacity in relation to you before.
And he found out that I was right there with him.
Yeah.
And so that it no longer... I don't even worry about it. I didn't worry about it before we started. I knew that that would be true. He has good instincts. You see that he is a great filmmaker. He took this very simple comedy and made it into a tight, fun-filled comedy where the audience does not stop laughing. You know?
He said that when he was making the film, he didn't think there were any big laughs.
Right, well... That's Ronnie. But all, you know, he wears a baseball cap and he sits on the camera dolly and he works like a hawk. And we have a shorthand. I would do a scene and he would come up and say, "Yep." And I'd go, "Okay." And that's all he did.
Well, and there's such an off-angle quality to some of the more intimate moments, too. I especially loved your scene with Michael when you had your argument. And you go to apologize, but in the meantime, he's inside
the drawer. That was his idea. Michael is an incredible.
A wonderful setup to have that conversation with him in a drawer.
Like, yeah, he's, I mean, that's Michael. We were in a restaurant having lunch on the set in New York, during the filming in New York. The man came in to audition for the saxophone player on the train. I said, I pay him some money and he keeps playing, I've got to give him more, but the way Chuck is, he would give him everything. Do I drop my wallet in the opening of his horn? Michael said, write him a check. I said, that's right, I'll write him a check. I went to the prop man, I said, give me a checkbook. We worked it out. Ronnie didn't know whether it would work or not. Michael and I did. He shot it, and it's in the film. And that's the way it worked the whole time. My image of this movie, not including Ronnie because of my relationship with him anyway, that goes for a long time, is Shelley holding one hand, Michael holding the other after a take in a tough situation, and saying, "Yeah, I think that was it. I think that's the take. That's great right there."
You mentioned Repertory Company. Could you tell us more about who comprises this ideal company that
no,
you're talking about?
I just want to be in it. I figure that Ronnie knows pretty much what he's doing. And so everybody that he put up against me to act with, I had a great time. See, the trust, every time Ronnie has great trust in me also. Did he mention that, or just that it was real tough to be friends, you know? So during scenes, I would go off and create bits. I would direct little bits in the scene. And then I would bring Ronnie over and show him, and he would change them the way he needed it to happen. And then we would go. He has the final say, and that's that. The girls in the that beat me over the head with the filled boxes of candy in the elevator, he brought me over. I talked to each one. I chose all the girls that were going to be in the movie. And he just put his arm around me and he said, "Thanks a lot, man. The way you work with children is just, I thought I was great, but..."
It has to be one of the more enviable jobs that you would have on a project like
yeah.
this, to choose some of that kind of...
Yeah. I mean, and that's because he has great faith in me, and I proved to him that he is the director, and I'm the actor, and I'll be right there with him.
One of the things he was worried about is because you're a very opinionated person and very strong in your ideas...
Yeah.
That he was worried that you wouldn't be able to let go when suddenly he was working with you as your collaborator, but ultimately as your boss.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that comment from the last
time. No, I talked to him about it before.
Oh.
Okay, there you go.
I've got to see.
How many young people do what I do, and I never smoke, you know, in public. Can we keep that? I'm going to smoke a record off. I smoke a cigarette off the record.
Of course, sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
With everybody. Okay.
Although following in the line of that, on film when
yeah.
you smoke, you make a comment
funny, you
that
you don't smoke.
Why am I doing this? Because I
yeah right.
So was that a kind of a conscious?
No, that was written in. I mean, that was there.
I remember you at the Toronto Film Festival about 4 or 5 years ago where. Refused to have your picture taken with a cigarette.
Right.
I noticed the cigarette had a filter on it too. Was that specifically done in the bathtub scene?
No, that was just with the cigarettes they had. I mean, the prop man had tie-ins with different companies, so we smoked what was available.
The reference to the public image, obviously you take that very seriously.
I do take that seriously, only in terms of the very young people that like the Fonz and do what he does. I do take that seriously.
What kind of feedback do you get sometimes when, I mean, do children often try to contact you in some way and let you know how you've been a role model for them? How do you positively know?
Every day. Every day. I'm the chairman, or I was the chairman for the second time, of the Special Arts Festival for the physically and mentally challenged children here. I met a young girl, and her mother said, my daughter is autistic, and started to come to the surface when she started watching Happy Days. And I asked the mother to back up a little bit, and I spoke to this little girl, and I talked to her like the Fonz, you know. And I said, I want to tell you, I'm very happy to meet you. You know, I didn't know I was going to get to meet you today. And I went, and she went, and her mother passed out. I mean, an autistic child literally made sounds for the first time because of the Fonz. We did a show where I casually mentioned to Richie, when he was still there, didn't leave me alone. I said, very cool, you know, anybody could get a library card. You know, this is great. Just go in, get one, you get books, you could read, anybody could read. The registration for library cards in America went up 500%.
Okay. That must be kind of scary.
No, it's not scary
really?
At all. It's great. Because I didn't know it was going to happen when I do it. You see, I carry that along with my interviewee self, but I don't carry that along with me as my actor self. I don't think of that it's going to be that when I'm doing it. I only think that we can do it now. Mm-hmm. I did a show where I asked for Richie to be in an accident so the Fonz can cry for the first time. And they now use that show. They now use that show for emotionally repressed children to show them that the Fonz cried and is still standing, that you can be emotional and cool at the same time.
Speaking of the Fonz, I'm a little confused about the chronology between your formation of that character and the making of Lords of Flatbush.
Lords of Flatbush was 1972, and he was a loner, but he was an artist, the guy in the Lords of Flatbush. The first show of Happy Days came on January of 74.
They're that far apart, because I didn't see it until the show had already been
That's born. Right, because yeah. It didn't come out until May of 74.
Yeah. Well, did the popularity of the show had something to do with the release?
I don't think so.
No,
I think that the film was sold before I got the job.
Okay, as far as the character that you had in Lords of Flatbush, might that have been an influence on your subsequent character in Happy Days?
No. Sly Stallone was, but not my character. I had a relationship at that time with Sly Stallone. And so, in the beginning, I would think of, what would Sly do in this situation? Because he's got this great imagination going, you know. And then after that, I just, you know, he took over and went in other directions anyway. And now we're doing the 10th year.
Was there a kind of camaraderie on Lords of Flatbush? I wonder, because there were so many people who, it was their first picture.
There was a camaraderie, yeah. I mean, there was still, you know, I don't want to get catty or anything, but for a lot of us, there was a camaraderie that carried on afterwards. I mean, Sly came out here, his car broke down,
yeah.
And then he called me up, I went to get him. And then as soon as Rocky came out, I never saw him again.
How did the two directors work on that picture?
There was only one director on that picture, and that was Marty Davidson. The other man is a ganef. It's a Jewish word for thief.
Fairly straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, it's the truth.
Yeah.
I'm curious, since you Ron Howard left the show
yeah.
on television, how do you feel personally in terms of the quality, the consistency of the series? Any changes that you can talk about?
I had an acting partner after Ronnie left, I developed a terrific rhythm with Scott Baio, who is not your run-of-the-mill teenage idol. He is an actor. He trains. He went off by himself to take mime. You know, I mean, he's real interested, and it's real terrific. Now, he went off to fly on his own, and he's going to do his own series. And so now I'm left with a whole new bunch of people this year that I have to whip into an ensemble again, because I won't settle for less.
Does it become almost then in real life as it is on the television screen, your character and then you on the set,
mm-hmm.
almost becomes synonymous?
Yeah. You know, well, remember that it's the same guy in both roles. The creation is mine. He comes out of me. And the way that I am is that I have a good time on the set and I take care of the young actors and point them in the right direction. We also have a terrific director, Jerry Paris. You know?
When you get into the film roles then, and as I said, so many times I've noticed an attempt to get away from the Fonz image, do you find yourself sometimes unconsciously maybe slipping back into it or regretting getting away from it, or is that your
mm-mm.
intention?
No, I just have a good time, and I do pieces on a visceral reaction. Pieces are offered to me all the time, and if it goes down in my whole body, if I feel it, if I'm filled up with it, I'll do it. In this case, I didn't have to think about it. Ronnie was going to direct it, and I was going to do it no matter what. There were certain people in my camp that are advisors to me that read it and said, wait a minute, I don't think maybe this is such a great piece to do, because I don't know how you can make the morgue funny. And I said, this time I can't listen. This time I cannot even have a second guess. Ronnie's going to do it, I'm going to do it. And that's final. And I'm going to throw caution to the wind, and what happens, happens. And what happened was that I had one of the greatest times I ever had, professionally.
Were there other people you knew who said, wait a minute, you're making a mistake, Michael Keaton is doing what you ought to be doing?
And people have said that, don't you usually play that part? And again, I didn't think about it. Those people have now seen screenings of it and said, I'm very glad you did what you did, because this is a funny film.
Well, you did actually have a choice between the two roles.
No, I did not.
Oh.
Ronnie gave me the script. He said, who would you play? I said, well, I read it, and I always played Bill. And this is what, he said, good, so you'll play Chuck.
Well, he told me that he gave you the choice, didn't want you to choose Bill.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I had no choice.
Behind in his mind, if you insisted on Bill, he would have given you Bill.
No, because I have to tell you something. He's just...
I'm opinionated.
See, I said I was going to play Bill, and he said, no, I'm going to play Chuck. And I said, but I always play Bill. And he said, yeah, but you're going to play Chuck. And I said, okay. We would talk on the set, and I talk very fast, and I'm committed to what I say.
Mm-hmm.
And we would say, and I'd say, Ronnie, I've got to do it this way. And because if we do it this way, and it's the end of the film, the beginning of the relationship, so I've got to touch him this way, and he's got to touch me back, and that's the way it's got to end. That's the final picture. It's got to look like that. And he said, okay. There were other arguments I would have where I would say, Ronnie, I've got to do it this way, and this is the reason why. He would say, no. I would come back to him 5 minutes later. I said, Ronnie, I'm up against the tree. I'm just leaning against the tree, but I really believe that I'm right, and this is the way we've got to do it, because he could not. I'd come back to him 5 minutes later. I said, Ronnie, I'm in the tree now. I'm up the tree. I'm on the branch. And we've got to do it this way, and I've tried to do it your way, and I just can't do it. And he would go, no, this is the reason why. I said, I understand. I didn't see that before. Boom, I'm cutting down the tree. And that's the way it went the whole time. You know? And he has the final say.
There's something in the film, though, that to me seemed a false note. When you're trussed up with the tape and the water is about to be funneled into your mouth, I was real uncomfortable with that scene. And I wonder if in watching it again, if you feel moments of discomfort or other scenes.
Because why?
It seemed uncomfortably nasty.
Yeah, it was nasty, I'll tell you. And not only that, it was also a dizzifying scene. I got real dizzy in that scene. That's where the ad-lib came from.
Twirling, yeah.
Were you scared? No, mostly dizzy. That was an ad-lib right there in the moment. It was caught on film.
But the fact that there was a moment singled out there to develop a kind of a nastiness about what's about to happen to you instead of just being
so
bumped
bizarre.
Off.
I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, you know, taping someone up and thing. I mean, it sort of mutes the real terror.
Yeah. And not only that, but I also thought that at that moment, if you're going to believe in the middle of all this craziness that something was going to happen, it had to go one step further in order to lock in a sense of danger, I thought, you know. Because, I mean, Michael undercuts it all the time by going, oh, you're the police, you're gonna, guns, excuse me for a minute, and, you know. I mean, and his whole section of that is very funny, I think.
Well, there are many times some moments of seriousness will be twisted. Your confession that you're very uncomfortable about dealing with the ring of girls, and what am I doing, my hair's falling out, and then he comes out with that great line.
Right.
That kind of balance is real nice, sure. Yeah. But it just seemed, I mean, the water actually is starting to come into your
yes,
mouth.
Yes, but you have to remember one thing. I mean, you can't write this down, but the hose... The mouthpiece was rubber that I was biting on, and they cut off the hose and added latex. So I was biting on latex, and the water could not come into my mouth, and the holes that you saw the water going out, so it looked like it was coming in, they were cut at a 45-degree angle, so all the water was going in the opposite direction. And only on one take was I able to get my mouth open enough to get the water in, so when they took it out, I spread it back out like a fountain. And that was, I wanted that to happen, and it was like sheer luck that I got that amount of water in my mouth. But it was all going the other way, you know, but filling me up like a lake, and I don't like to be confined. My fear is a straitjacket. So I was zenning out a lot in that scene. You know, I mean, that was tough for me.
Ron told us that there were certain things, had he been asked to do them, like nude sequences or whatever, at a certain point he would have said no. Where would you say no with a similar kind of advice during the filming of a love scene or whatever? What kind of a guideline would you adopt?
My guideline would be an instinctual sense of that it is an integrated part of the whole. And if it wasn't, and it was gratuitous, then we wouldn't do it. Because I have to tell you, I had many, many talks with Ronnie about that. We don't need so many nude scenes in the picture anyway. We don't need so many bare-breasted women all the time. And we cut a scene out talking about it. We cut a whole scene out where the girl was naked.
Do you feel the way the film is constituted now, there may still be a little too much of that?
No. No. Because it's also a selling tool. I mean, you know, let us call a shovel. You know?
Yeah, but at what point do you find yourself getting uncomfortable? I mean, how do you define what is taste?
I don't know, yeah, but you know what? I mean, in your choice is your talent. You know, that's the first thing I ever wrote down in my drama book. In your choice is your talent. And you know, it comes to you. You know, it takes you right up to the line, and then my whole inner timing just says, "Wait a minute, this is not right. There's something wrong here." That's indescribable. I don't know what to say, except that my whole body is aware of it. You know.
When
did you react physically?
I react physically. Yeah. Two things, yeah.
Well, when you were referring to the scene that you ended up not shooting because you talked it out, did you have an actual physical revulsion or reaction?
Not a revulsion, just an opinion, an inner knowledge that it would have, you don't need it. The story is really about Chuck and Bill, and Chuck and Shelley Long.
Mm-hmm.
He learns to love, and he learns to have a best friend. And he learns to live, you know, and that's what the story is about. It's a love story. That's just a bizarre love story, you know. And thank God, very funny, because everybody worked as an ensemble.
At a lot of the preview screenings, we were being told about earlier. Do you often go to...
Ronnie didn't let me go. He would call me at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning after each screening and tell me exactly what happened. But he said, if you show up, it will in some way pervert the reality of the cards. So I listened and I didn't go.
Do you sometimes go to test markets out of the state?
I have. For Heroes, I did.
Slip in. And
yeah.
Out.
Well, not only slip in, I mean, they told them I was coming.
Oh.
I mean, they made an event out of it in Denver and in San Jose with Heroes.
Can you... It would seem to me that wherever you go, you're highly recognizable.
That's true.
Did you ever do things to disguise yourself?
No. I did once. I took my stepson to San Diego, and I grew a beard. I had dark glasses, and I wore a very big floppy hat. And the little kid came up and said, "Hi, Henry." And I took off the hat and the glasses, and that was that. And so I never disguised myself, and it is a part of my life now for 10 years. And people stop me and say hi, and they're very warm to me, and that's the way it is. I don't care.
A lot of the work that you do on telephones, of course, that's the most visible thing, indication we have of your humanitarian work.
Yeah, I'm associated with Time, Money, and Name, 36 organizations.
36?
Yeah.
But that's actively involved.
Yeah. Choose among those to tell us something about, something that maybe we can't get through the press notices.
Special Olympics? Everybody should visit a Special Olympics once in their life. It is one of the great moments in time. McLaren Hall, my wife is very active, also a home for abused children, institution for abused kids. And I spend most of my time hugging, just hugging and touching. MS readathons. I host two luncheons a year. Gotten letters from children with learning disabilities who have never written letters before. I have seen children use their appendages before that have never been able to, spastic children, that have never been able to control themselves. I met a boy, his doctor told me that he was supposed to be dead, but because he met the Fonz, he was now still alive 2 months later. I don't know where it comes from. I just do it. This is the cerebral palsy telethon for that I do every year. Epilepsy. We did a show then. I asked them to write me a show on Happy Days where we dealt with an epileptic student.
How often will you have input into the specific scripts for episodes?
Well, a lot.
Like
I have different. I've asked for different shows and we've done them. And
do you think you have a responsibility as a public figure?
I don't think of it in those terms. I just do it as it comes. Do you know what I mean? I don't do it because I think I've got to watch out for these kids. I can do this.
As a public figure, though, do you think that every famous actor should be part of his community in that way?
I would never say that because it's impossible. No. People should do what they need to do. I think that probably in America what we should do more of is volunteer. We have got to come back to being a community. If the government is not so interested in the population, then the population must become very interested in itself. And not in individual groups, but we must start to come back again. Sometimes I wish we were back in 1864 when you built a house, all of your neighbors came and built it with you.
This community.
Yeah. I think that is very, very important at this moment, or we're in deep trouble. Then we're just living on a memory. Because there are too many people out of work in our country.
Have you been able to find a lifestyle for yourself, family, and marriage?
I love my family.
That has that kind of communal...
Yeah. Well, my wife is interested, and my son is a sensitive guy, and he's my daughter.
Oh.
There she is, Zoe.
A Rudy Kazooty hat.
How old is your daughter?
20 months.
What's her name?
Speak Spanish. Zoe, Z-O-E. It means life.
Sister's name.
Is it?
Yeah.
Great. There she is.
What about your stepson?
She speaks Spanish. Apple juice. Apple juice. Can you give us another? Gracias.
Yeah.
My stepson is a baseball player who is a drummer who wants to be a lawyer. So I don't think he's figured it out yet.
What's his name?
His name is Jed. He's going to be 11 in the middle of this month. The end of this month. He is sensational. And we all sat in my living room cheering for the Lakers, my little daughter. Dribble and shoot, dribble and shoot.
Yeah.
No, when Ron makes
she calls them latkes. Go latkes, go latkes.
Potato?
Yeah. She heard Lakers and it came out latkes.
When Ron makes this baseball picture that we were all talking about a while ago, are you a sports fan too? Would you like to see a good sports
He
film
taught game? Me to play baseball. He bought me my first mitt. I was never a sports human being until I joined Happy Days and started pitching for the Happy Days team. And then I pitched 5 shutouts. But I cannot catch the ball. And I've just learned to hit the ball. So what I do is I pitch and I get out of the way.
Well, what kind of sports did you indulge in as a kid?
I went water skiing, horseback riding. And I was on the swim team for a while and I liked gymnastics.
The Happy Days baseball team.
Right, very important part of our organization. We travel all over the country and play ball.
Pretty good team, too. I
pretty damn good team. We play for real.
For charity.
And for charity.
To raise money for local organizations.
In Miami, we played against the Dolphins for cancer. But that was a shock. Because a football player holds a baseball bat as I hold a toothpick.
If you have a toothpick, you can try to tell you hold.
It was amazing. Those men were very, very large. And we played against the Lakers. And they are very tall. And they never have to move. They just put their arm out and catch the ball. I mean, it's depressing.
Wherever it's hit, they
really
reach it.
Magic Johnson puts out his arm and the ball comes to him like a magnet. He's playing third. It's going by first and it goes zoop. It's amazing.
Tell us a little bit about working with Shelley Long.
She is very well trained. She is adorable. She is imaginative, supportive, and I enjoy kissing her. We worked out that bit together when I first kiss her, and
I take the glove off.
Take the glove off. Mm-hmm. And the glove was written, and the rest we worked out together. But my trying to find the zipper, and then she says it's on the side, honey. You know, it was all worked out moments before we shot the film.
Any retakes?
A lot of retakes. It was fun sitting with her in the bathtub. And she looks beautiful.
Interesting scene, too, because it gives us a cue to the fact that you definitely can have the oddball quality there. It just needed her to bring it out. Maybe.
Right. I've never said this before. I probably will never say this again. Ron Howard loves water. The scene was written where the camera would follow us and follow the clothing to the bed. One day he came and he said, not the bed. You will look at the bed. You will think it will be the bed. We will pull back and you will be in the bathtub. Because I think that he has an enormously entertaining human moments in the shower, I think. and I think that's where it comes from.
Could you go in the other room and tell him that?
Here we go again. I've never been on a junket like this before.
Funny together.
Be a great writer, but I don't know what to write. Directing maybe, but acting is hard enough. So at the moment, I have a company, you know. I have a music company and a children's television company and two TV companies and a movie company. So I'm producing, and that's fun, but I like acting. So I'll stick with that for a while.
And as far as the TV series goes, what about its immediate future? Is it just going to keep rolling along?
I don't know. Right now we take the time period every week, even in reruns. We are in the top 20. Right now, we are going to do it for the 10th year. And after the 5th year, before the 5th year, I said, well, 5 years is enough for anybody, and I think I'll move on. And so here it is, the 10th year. So I've learned never to say what I'll do, because I don't know.
Was there not going to be an update on the bolts at one point?
Yes, but then they asked somebody else to do that. So, but I still talk to them every once in a while.
I came to the Happy Days series rather late, because by the time I got out of the service, it had already been on several years, and I saw everything sort of fully hatched.
Yes, right.
As far as a period of development.
You can watch reruns now and catch the early.
Well, I mean, don't you go clear back, though, to Love American Style? I mean, wasn't there...
I was not on that show. It was a segment of Love American Style, which they liked, so they pulled it out as a pilot. It did not have the Fonz character. The next pilot they shot had the Fonz character, and then we were off and running.
Okay, well, then was it a question of gradually developing some of the stylistic things? Like,
ooh, without a doubt.
Tapping on the jukebox, and, I mean, you had this magic with your hands.
Yeah, no, from the very beginning, I took a lot of words out of my character in the beginning and put the thumb in, which I got from the Gladiators. And A comes from the word fuck. You know? She's so fucking beautiful. Don't fuck with me. Hey, I feel so fucking crazy. I can't believe it. No, I can't say fuck on an 8 o'clock show, so E. So A works, is a pseudonym.
But then what about the device of being able to pound on things and they work instantly?
Yeah, isn't that great?
Was that in somebody's script, or did that just sort of show up?
That was in somebody's script. And then I gradually, every few years I would change the character and we would develop him a little bit so that I wouldn't get bored. This year I've got a whole new bunch of people, I can't believe it.
What's the composition going to be this year?
I'm going to have a girlfriend. I'm going to meet a woman who plays the flute and has a child from another marriage. And I have always thought that if I married, I would marry an English teacher, an English professor, diametrically opposed to the Fonz. And the way that I see the relationship is that I'll do something in public, and she will smile all the way home, at which time she will tell me why I should never do that again. I will tell her why she doesn't know what she's talking about, and you will probably see the Fonz never do it again.
And what about the other characters?
I think we will see Clarence in the kitchen, the chef, and I think that will be played by a midget, a little person.
Working in the sink.
Pat Morita is going to come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Almo Lanero went with Scotty and Aaron. One of my favorite actors who played one of the students when I was a teacher, the black actor Kevin Sullivan, will now be my assistant in the garage. And I think there are other characters, but I'm not sure. I just will hold my breath.
Before the time gets out, I want to get back to the movie for a second.
Sure, I want to too.
That central situation where you are participating and organizing and conducting a prostitution ring. Okay.
Yes. Well, no, I am not. I am only being the business managers to these women of the Velvet Night.
Exactly. That's how he would say it in the film.
Right.
Okay. How concerned might you be, since you are so aware of public image, how concerned are
you? I cannot... See, there it is. I cannot... I am aware, but I cannot be aware because it would stifle me. If I thought to do my work and think about the audience first, I would be a step behind myself. I do what I do. We have made a very funny, and we get caught, and we leave the business. But I can't think in those terms. you know?
In your mind, does the film satisfactorily, though, undercut the more ominous implications?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
It's a very moral film by the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And almost a, I was going to say Hollywood, but it's very innocent almost in terms of the morality behind it.
Yeah, it got the highest rating of any film that the Ladd Company has made, I think, in the history of the company. People go and enjoy themselves in a time when tenderness and caring on the screen doesn't exist anymore. And I think that is one of the major reasons that E.T. is working so well. Mm-hmm. Is because you want to go and you want to feel something for the things on the screen and not just pummeling and, having it. The wit scared out of you. And not only that, but this is a film where there are not major sections where there are no laughs. I mean, when there was a big audience, when the audience is filled, the waves of laughter are incredible, where you can't hear the lines. I mean, people keep on talking about going to see it a second time to get what they missed the first. You know, and the dog alone, when the audience is filled, gets just cheers.
It's the sound in that scene that's incredible. Yeah.
What are you doing for lunch?
I'm going with you.
Want to order up here? Do you want to go down?
Anything you want. See?
Whatever we want to do.
Do I listen to that guy or what?
You're right. You're willing to take direction.